we are having a session in the afternoon about more the theoretical aspects. This morning we've had a session on empirical stuff, also with modeling, of course. So maybe my presentation is really more philosophical. So perhaps, you know, in some sense, you know, this is a combination. I don't know. But I warn you. Wolf mentioned this morning that process thinking in evolutionary biology was sort of gaining strength, and this has been very much of interest to us, the authors of this paper, and this came through very clearly, for example, in the workshop we had in Iceland last year. So I could explain that in many words, but just to sort of say the obvious thing, that evolution obviously is a process or aggregate of processes that affect taxa and diverse in complex ways. So to us, of course, any meaningful research needs to be aware of this. However, as has been mentioned here repeatedly, we've seen in the past time research and ideas in evolutionary biology often move away from this. And that not doesn't necessarily need to be anything bad, but we need to be aware of it. So I think that what we're experiencing in this workshop and in this network and in speciation research in general is that we are seeing a digression or movement again towards a more process-oriented thinking. And so we are the converted, so I'm speaking to the converted in a sense. But I think we need to be aware of this issue, this dichotomy maybe between pattern or substance thinking and pattern thinking. If it was only just to teach the rest of evolutionary biologists or people from other fields of studies, like economics, for example. This distinction between process thinking and what I refer to here as substance thinking or pattern, we use the pattern maybe more here, but it's usually identified as substance thinking, is very well rooted in the history of philosophy and science. And it usually, pattern or substance thinking, identifies nature as composed of objects and states that are then moved on by mechanical forces of some sort. So that is a typical pattern or substance thinking, as I'm using. Whereas process thinking identifies nature or reality as a process in itself. So the process itself becomes the unit of identity. Now, while both approaches are relevant, substance thinking has certainly tended to dominate science in the 20th and some parts of the 21st century. And this is very much related to the dawn of science of mechanical materialism that characterized science as it emerged in the 17th century. And it really is a shape which is shaping all our modern societies, especially in the way we define values. And a way to sort of analyze this a little bit further, I take here a diagram from Rhodes from 2006. It's actually a paper about geomorphology, landscape formations, which is quite parallel to evolution in many ways. And it sort of shows that sort of pure substance thinking extreme here, with substance primacy, with process more or less ignored. There's pure process is completely process oriented. You can read this. But we would, of course, in most cases, find ourselves located somewhere in between. So maybe this is also something we can relate to many of the presentations this morning. Like, do we put substance or pattern as a priority with acknowledging processes, or are we process prioritized, which I think actually is the case here, but acknowledging, like Ulle just did, that substance or patterns are important parts of the process thinking. So this is maybe a mind game we can think about as where we place ourselves on this continuum here. But there are some very important basic facts, and I'm polarizing things, of course, here just to make the point. That's some issues about substance versus process thinking. Substance thinking tends to provide simple approaches. It acknowledges and facilitates approach to nature as a simple thing, and it searches for truths.
And we could dwell on this issue for quite a while and argue. But process thinking introduces much more complex approaches to understanding reality and understanding. So I'm using the word understanding here to sort of a little bit oppose it to truths. It's, I think, again, we are in this category here. And the examples we see in how this influences us in the way we think and the way we do our science is in the concepts we use, the questions we ask and hypotheses we make, like exactly how do we frame them, and the theories we present. To what extent is this shaped by substance thinking versus process thinking? And maybe the most obvious thing, and again I'm taking this from Rhodes, is the sort of contrasting the use of concepts. In substance thinking, being, in process thinking, becoming. You see the differences in the way the concepts are framed with regard to whether you're a substance thinker or a process thinker. Stasis, dynamism. Stability, transformation. Performance, evolution. Essential and changing properties. Historical unfolding of characteristic process patterns. So that is the concept part. But if we look at very sort of raw examples of evolutionary biology, we could claim that substance thinking views phenotype as either having environmental or genetic basis, and how often do we not see this kind of claim, or have we seen in the past at least, people doing this kind of research, whereas process thinking rejects this separation. Environment and genetic both apply in the process context, like Kevors, for example, showing us this morning. Now, the other example, which is more close to us and relates to statements that have been made repeatedly this morning, is that substance thinking would view speciation as allopatric, parapatric, or sympatric, put it in these categories. And it would usually demand that complete reproductive isolation is important. You know, this is an arrogant statement, but this is the way we, most of us, I think many of us older here at least, learned evolutionary biology. Whereas now we think, as process thinkers, that speciation is a much more complex continuum. So I'm just emphasizing here that this has really shaped the way we do our science in the last 30 years in particular. So I'm borrowing this from Andrew, yet again, to illustrate the process with some substance thinking in this diagram, where a speciation process is proposed here using these freshwater fish as examples of a continuous adaptive variation to adaptive, completely adaptive differences with very limited reproductive isolation to irreversible reproductive isolation. But notice here states with reversible reproductive isolation. And Andrew showed us also this morning an example from the finches where environmental conditions are in fact shifting the nature of divergence back and forth. So this is a serious, this is serious process thinking occurring here and being recognized as an important part to understand these patterns that we see in these fish. So this is a way, I'm just trying to illustrate this with this example, what we're really talking about. So in a nutshell, about what then process thinking when it comes to speciation of this kind, like this model there showed us, appreciates how all the factors we study interact spatially and temporally. For example, in evolutionary models of divergence and speciation, it allows us to appreciate how slow or fast divergence occurs. It allows us to understand how divergence is facilitated or constrained. And it allows us to explain and accept where and why divergence of certain forms is located on the path potentially leading to speciation and value these morphs and populations that are identified in this path. So basically, it is appreciating to see the world in a more complex way. We are not afraid of that, in other words. I'm using the word afraid here very consciously. Because in some ways, people want simplicity. We want to see things in a simple way. But this is not a simple world we live in. So why is this change happening? And again, I'm extracting, and I won't dwell long on this, you can read this slide really, that because we've heard so much good things this morning about how ecology is playing a role in promoting this process understanding of speciation research. because that's really where we identify that this is coming from. So I'm just emphasizing, for example, that in ecology, we have to appreciate the different levels of diversification for the ecological function. I mean, Matthew showed this very well just before. So units that are not necessarily species are very important in ecological context as having an ecosystem function. So this thinking is now being translated to the evolutionary thinking of divergence. And of course, this is supported by all these wonderful genetic studies showing us evidence of local divergence, like Ulle was showing us, for example, within a lake in for fishes, in natural experiments showing rates and of evolution and comparative studies, and as we will learn much more about in the afternoon, in theoretical models emphasizing frequency and density-dependent selection. So again, all of this seems to be very common to us. We all appreciate this, but I think we need to understand that this is not necessarily what everybody thinks about how the evolution of diversity takes place. And that sort of takes me to this slide. How do we then, in other words, value this change? Why is it important? And the most sort of aggressive example of that comes from applied issues. How do we apply understanding of biological diversity to management and conservation? And we claim simply that a focus on the species as an object of biological diversity is, as is done in most conservation and management biology, or has been done in the past at least, is more or less meaningless. It is the process of divergence, a pure process thinking, that is needed to really conserve and manage the concept of the diversity around us. And again, this is a very strong value issue. And the best example that we can find is the example of the African finch, bird diversity of bird species in an African rainforest that Tom Smith and colleagues have studied for a long time, looking at really where the generation of biodiversity is occurring. What explains the great diversity of species of birds in African rainforests? And what they find basically here is that this diversity is being born on the contrasts of the forest and the savanna. That's really where the evolution of diversity is occurring, explaining this great number of species in African rainforests. So why am I taking this example? It's because conservation measures in these forests have tended to focus on the numbers of species in the forest, conserving the forest and not the ecotone zones on the border of the forest and the savanna. So a management program or a conservation program is going completely in the opposite way. It is destroying the generation of biological diversity. So that's an extreme example. And then we could go on with more examples of this kind. So when it comes to the application of the understanding of biological diversity, this becomes very obvious. So we claim that we can translate that message from conservation and management biology to our own field of understanding evolution, of understanding speciation, that to be able to actually produce good science, valuable understanding of how species are formed or not formed, how they may move around in the continuum of speciation process, is what we are doing and what needs strong process-oriented thinking. That basically, a very strong, aggressive substance thinking in this sense would not really be very helpful at this time. And I think we agree on that. So maybe we can claim that this is to some extent, even though it's a bit arrogant to say that this is some paradigm shift towards the process, but I claim it is. And I think we should discuss it in this way. And I think evidence that is coming out of this meeting so far and will continue to come out will demonstrate that. And it does have message to evolutionary biology in general that this is happening, and we need to convey those messages. And we need to also consider that this is happening in other fields as well, like social science is burdened with substance thinking, economic problems in the world, you know, we can think about those. And the third author of this paper, Stephen Cronshaw, is actually a social scientist, works with human resource development, where he is applying theories and ideas very similar to speciation ideas. So it really ultimately relates to the way society is evolving, and you know, the issues of resilience and sustainability that we all now know are so important for resource use and conservation and to sort of preserve life on Earth. It's a very strong message into that part of discussion. So with that, I'll leave you. Thank you very much.
So I agree that we need to move to the process thinking. I think most of us do that anyway. But I object actually to actually trying to convey our get the message across that. You know, your last thing is that nature is not simple, because actually I think sort of process way of thinking is actually starting from the fact that nature is maybe simpler than we think, at least compared to the substance way of thinking, because it actually starts from, you know, first principles or whatever. I mean, because it's a process and it takes time to develop this process. So I think what this message that we should say is actually that, you know, by process thinking, we can actually make things much simpler.
Yeah. No, I see your point, and I agree with it partly. And I think that the way I would put it, and I don't know if we are talking about exactly the same thing, is that when we frame understanding and process thinking, it is actually looking very simple. But it is going to be, and it is extracted. We are extracting a situation, let's say, on a process of or a pattern towards speciation to understand how previous plasticity is affecting behavior that can affect later divergence, that type of thing. It's a relatively simple statement, but it is the correct statement. You could never get to that there. You are taking a complex situation but making a relatively simple conclusion. But if you approach that from a substance thinking, then you would, in the way we think about it at least, start from looking at these concepts as very simple things and come to an even more simple solution.
So I think also, I mean, I see both viewpoints, but also with the process-based thinking, it doesn't imply that there has to be a particular outcome. That is, you can get a diverse complexity of outcomes from the action of one process, because other processes that might be important may or may not also be acting. So it's saying, you know, here's something that's going on, but we can have a diversity of outcomes from it.
But there is nobody right and wrong here. You know, there is a certain amount of overlap in these ideas. Yeah. I think we'll, if there's any burning question to some of the other speakers this morning, or somebody that would like to make a general comment before we conclude and go for lunch. And, well, if not, I thank you for the patience for my chairmanship this morning, and thank to all of you for a very good morning session, in my opinion. Thank you.